From Out of the City is the latest novel by broadcaster John Kelly, set in Dublin in the not-too-distant future. It opens with the murder of a prominent politician in an Ireland very different to what we know today. Now part of a European alliance, US gunships prowl Dublin Bay, there's a US Army base in the Phoenix Park, and we have radioactive pebbles on Killiney Beach, warmer temperatures and even more rain. A mixture of satire, espionage and spy thriller, From Out of the City wanders amidst the ruins of a dystopian Dublin city on a riveting journey full of twists and turns. John Kelly, you're very welcome into studio.
That was very good, Sean. Thank you. Goodbye. And,
now, how far into the future is this story set in Dublin?
I guess about 40 years or so. I didn't define it specifically, but I guess about 40 years hence. I didn't want to go too far into the future for it to be science fiction, but I wanted it to be far enough into the future for Dublin to be different, to be radically different in some ways and yet somehow quite the same as it is now. And I wanted to take it out of the present because I think the present has so many very strong signs and signifiers that it would date it very firmly in the now. So I didn't want it to be recession era Ireland, you know, post-boom Ireland, any of those things. So I just moved it a little bit into the future to kind of discombobulate myself and discombobulate the reader.
There's a very dramatic opening revealed in literally the third sentence, I think, when the United States president gets shot at a state dinner in Dublin Castle.
Yeah, well, what I was interested in was the idea of dysfunction. And it seems to be all around us at the moment, all sorts of social dysfunction and civil dysfunction and civic dysfunction and personal dysfunction and so on. And then it occurred to me, well, look, the most dysfunctional act that anybody can commit really is to kill another human being. And then to couple that then with the whole civic and political dysfunction, when you assassinate the head of a country, in this book, the main power in the world, that's extremely dysfunctional, and that brings the whole, everything into question. So it was to heighten everything that I did that. The book began actually with no more than page after page of a man getting out of bed. That's how it began. The blockbuster element, which is perversely backgrounded throughout the whole thing of the assassination of the American president, is not really what the book's about in a sense. Although I've been surprised to note that so far a lot of the reviews have been talking about it as being a kind of a thriller. The narrator keeps insisting that it isn't.
Yes, and I suppose it is one that it throws up quite a lot of laughs, maybe at unlikely moments, like for instance where you're writing, and I'm just quoting, dipping in here on page 143, where you say, "What is certain is that unless a Dublin Bay prawn has exploded like a pink grenade in the presidential mouth, it isn't the dinner that killed him."
Well, the humour that's in it, I didn't set about actually to write a funny book at all, but the humour that's in it comes from, I suspect, the language itself, but also from this ornery kind of narrator who's an octogenarian who kind of collects information and collects facts and knows everything about everything and believes that everything can be known. And he says the odd thing that's kind of like that, quite rash, and the humour comes from that, I suppose. There aren't so many jokes in it, but it turns out there are quite a few laughs in it.
Yes, that's a moment where I think the narrator, Monk, is watching the TV coverage live from Dublin Castle.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of that stuff that you would know, Sean. There's a lot of people stationed outside Dublin Castle and handing back to the studio and all that's going on. So, Monk is the central character. As I say, he's in his 80s. And he watches everything. And because technology has moved on to such an extent, he's able to watch everything.
Yeah, tell us a bit more about this character, Monk, and his relationship then with his neighbour, Anton Schroeder.
Well, I can't give away everything about that relationship because there are various twists and turns that happen towards the end of the book. But he keeps an eye on this neighbour for reasons that we can't be sure about, other than he keeps an eye on most people. But he has a particular interest on the neighbour and on another neighbour who lives underneath him in this dilapidated wreck of a house in Dunleary. And by means of being hacked into their computers and by means of all sorts of stuff, like he leases security feeds from public houses and all sorts of stuff. And so he sits up in his attic watching everything that goes on. And we're at a point where basically you can know just about everything about everybody if you've got the energy to do it. And this is what this man does all the time. It's all he does. He collects information, gathers it up, believes that there is nothing which cannot be known. And then this is how it ties in then with the presidential assassination, because he starts to piece together details of it when, let's say, the story starts to come closer to him and the people around him.
Are we in the realms, and I know this is a distinction that people like Margaret Atwood would talk about, of is it speculative fiction or science fiction?
Speculative fiction, yeah. I'm very fond of that idea of Margaret Atwood's, that speculative fiction idea. And William Gibson as well is another one I like. But I didn't ever want this to become a futuristic Mad Max kind of scenario. In fact, I went out of my way to make Dublin not be like that. I mean, one of the characters says Dublin's just become this strange wreck, a mixture of Camden Town and Philadelphia. It hasn't become, it hasn't become Shanghai or Tokyo. No flying cars, no robots, nothing like that.
In this Ireland of the not too distant future, we'll call it, Ireland is, it's a politically in a very different place and part of a new European alliance. What does this new structure look like then?
Well, I didn't go into that in huge detail because, again, that was all part of the discombobulation. There's my favourite word at the moment. Of just trying to change the background to everything. I mean, we still have a Taoiseach. It's still Leinster House. There are protests going on outside the front gates of Leinster House, which ends in blood and tears. But we're part of a European alliance. There are casual references throughout that suggest that all sorts of conflicts have been happening. And I thought it might be better just to casually say things like after what happened in Sweden without necessarily telling a whole story about what happened in Sweden. So there's lots of suggestions that will unnerve, I think, and create a certain unease about what might have happened. We're in a closer relationship with the United States, and that the United States is actually based here in an open fashion. The president's daughter is at Trinity College, and that therefore has been had to be turned into a fortress to protect her. So all of this is going on, and yet there is this sense that our connection with America is very intimate. And there's a discussion at one point between two characters where one of them is asked, are you anti-American? And he says, well, have you seen my record collection? So and points out that Americans are, in fact, they're us. They are our cousins. They're a version of ourselves, you know. So they're all descended from us. So we can't entirely disconnect in any way.
There are parallels between From Out of the City and George Orwell's 1984, or the more recent City of Bohain by the Irish author Kevin Barry. Now, why do you think maybe these dystopian novels are popular, and do they hold a kind of a dark attraction for people?
I can see why Kevin went for it. And Kevin went for the full-blown dystopian thing. I mean, his
that's the opposite of utopian.
Yeah, it is completely. Mine hasn't gone as sort of high-blown as that. It's not as heightened as Kevin's is. I tried to keep reining that back and keeping Dublin almost not all that different from what it is now, except it's more run down. As I say, it's not about flying cars and so on. It's more of a wreck. Well, I suppose to speculate about what might happen is something we all do, even in the most casual of conversations in the pub. We'll talk about what do you think is going to happen. So there's an element of that, and it's interesting to imagine what might happen. But I am much more interested in what might happen in 40 years' time than I am in what things might be like in 200 years' time, because that would be pure science fiction.
With any luck, you'll be alive to see it happen.
Well, I was just trying to figure this out. Yeah, Monk is 80-something, so, and the other character in it is 40-something, so I'm like the younger character in a sense, so I could end up being Monk if I last that long.
There are elements, what a thought, of a political thriller, spy novel and a detective story to the book. So what are the influences, John, both literary and other, that you would have drawn on?
Well, I suppose all of the reading I've done would have had some impact in some way along the line. And, you know, the last 10 years I've read a lot. I probably read more in the last 10 years than I read up until that point. I was very lucky at school in that for my A-levels, we did some very good stuff. I mean, we did Hamlet, we did Dubliners by Joyce, we did The Selected Seamus Heaney, you know, we did Middlemarch, and we did other things that I cared less for, like The Rape of the Lock and Chaucer and stuff. But, you know, Joyce is a scary word, and a lot of writers mention his name the way that the kids in Hogwarts talk about Voldemort. You know, you just do not mention the name. Something bad will happen. But I think if you've actually read a book like Ulysses, for instance, to say that it hasn't had an influence on you would be like, I don't know, it'd be like if you played electric guitar and you said Jimi Hendrix has had no influence on me. I mean, it would have an influence. And in a sense, I sure hope it has.
Of course, you can always listen to Ulysses as well as
well,
read it.
I do. That's that. I actually do listen to it. I have a version of it and I listen to it a lot. And I keep the book by the bed, funny enough. I I get great pleasure from Ulysses. I find it funny, and I get the same pleasure I get from a book like Ulysses as I do from music. The other ones that, I mean, Kevin, who's been kind about the book in a blurb, mentioned Thomas Pynchon, and there would be an element of that, and J.P. Dunleavy, funny enough, has been mentioned a few times. And I hadn't read The Ginger Man until a few weeks ago. When people started mentioning The Ginger Man, I thought I'd better check this out. And I loved it, I must say, I loved it. And I could see the connection, all right.
What about maybe your exploration of language or maybe experimentation there, John? I mean, using a word like pandiculation.
Oh, yes. Yes.
You better explain.
Well,
when
I find a word like pandiculation, I can't resist it. And that, I think that, in terms of influence, is definitely coming from Flann O'Brien, because, you know, he would have enjoyed a word like that and would have made good use of it. When we were kids growing up in Fermanagh, and then it occurs to me in later years that Flann O'Brien was from Tyrone, we talked like Flann O'Brien when we were messing. You know, that kind of language and that
like
kind
how?
Of, well, just that kind of surreal, heightened, absurdist language. We went on like that all the time. It came quite naturally to us, actually. Now, as we got older, we became more like Beckett. We realised nothing's going to happen here, ever.
You're very high opinion of yourselves up there,
oh,
don't
we
you?
Were. But when you're sitting underneath a lamppost and you know, one guy's just been spitting for 3 hours on the tarmac and you think, well, will we go home now? It's pretty Beckettian in its ways. But no, the Flann O'Brien messing is something that appeals to me. And because this monk guy is a sort of character who would use a word like pandiculation, I kind of enjoyed using it.
I suppose anybody who even half knows you won't be surprised that there are references to music in the book, which I presume, whether they were conscious or otherwise, you couldn't stop yourself, maybe.
Well, they're largely unconscious. I mean, in some senses, they're relevant in that they sort of date people, you know, the music they might have listened to when they were younger and so on, or the type of music they like might suggest something about their character. Music wasn't a huge driving force in the book. People sometimes ask, do I listen to music when I write? And I can't, really. I listen sometimes to music like Steve Reich or something like that, which I think sends a certain pulse of energy into the room, which helps. But music wasn't really a big part of it, but it sets down a few markers, all right. But the language itself should be like music, you know, I think.
And you have a day job, which has different strands to it. There's lyric, and also there's your work with the art show on television now, going out on Friday at 8:30 in the evening. So where does the writing fit in?
5 o'clock in the morning, mostly. Yeah, it's the only way you can do it. Which explains a lot about the book, actually, because when you're writing in a kind of an unconscious sort of a fugue at 5 o'clock in the morning and you haven't had your breakfast yet, you know, all sorts of stuff goes on in your brain and all sorts of stuff emerges. When you read it later that evening, when you get home from work, you don't even remember.
From five until?
Well, until the kids get up, you know. So 5 until 7, 7:30, sometime around then, and then bedlam, and that's good night, writer. For a while, you know.
on an empty stomach.
On an empty stomach, yeah.
John Kelly, thank you very much indeed for coming to studio. The book is called From Out of the City. It gets a wonderful recommendation by John Banville, among others. Intricate, outrageous, sophisticated, funny, wonderfully entertaining. It's published by Docky Archive and it sells for £10.50 sterling, which I presume works out at about £12.50.
I'll find out tonight. Launch tonight, 6:30.
£14.50, actually. That's a...
six, Hodges Figgis. Tonight, okay, is the launch. And if you are getting the book, support your local bookshop.
John Kelly, thank you very much indeed.